I'm going to hope that you're ready, guest speaker, and Terry, and please take it away, and looking forward to your share. Thank you. Go ahead.
Well, isn't life grand? We're full of all these little mysteries. I'm the guest speaker, Blaine P. Pick and Willie. It's his fault. He can't hear me, so I can blame him as much as I like. My name's David. I'm a non-smoker, and that's what I mainly classify myself as. That's what I always classify myself as. I got 18 years of being a non-smoker again in my life on the 10th of February, just gone. And Gary, Pete Pick and Willie, he asked me two or three times if I'd like to speak again in here, and I got to thinking about it. Since it was 18 years is a good round figure, I feel. You know, it's divisible by 3, and it's divisible by 6, and it's divisible by 2, so that's 3 numbers you can divide it by. And I thought it'd be a good opportunity to speak, but the 12th was taken, so here I be on the 26th. 12th was the closest weekend of the 10th. So now that's out of the way. Let's see if I can fill in a bit of time here. I'm not real flash at this speaking caper. I don't make notes, and what I say is how I feel at the moment. I first started smoking probably 5 or 6 years of age. Yeah, just as dares and what have you. We'd crawl under the house and we'd light up some log cabin tobacco, and we used to pool our pocket money, and three or four or five of us would pool our pocket money and buy a packet of log cabin and fine cut tobacco. There was two main brands in those days. There was Havelock and log cabin, and buy a packet of Tally-Ho cigarette papers, and we'd sit under the house and we'd roll these durries and and smoke them and go green and blue and red and dizzy and everything else. You know, it was sort of a fun thing to do. It was shore beach running around in the hot sun, spinning around in circles to get dizzy, I guess. But that doesn't mean to say I continued to smoke on a continuous basis. And no, it was all experimental, off and on. It wasn't permanent. I really started my smoking career when I left school at the age of 16, and I smoked until I was 42. So approximately 26 years is what I smoked for, give or take a month or two. And I feel on retrospect I tried to stop smoking pretty early on in the piece, and found I couldn't, so gave up and continued to smoke. And I never really liked it that much. To be quite honest, I did like a smoke with a cup of tea after a good meal. I really enjoyed sitting at the kitchen table after a good meal, be it breakfast, lunch or dinner or just a snack, and I enjoyed a couple of smokes with a couple of cups of tea. Well, actually, there was more than a couple of smokes involved. I don't think I was ever a mild sort of a smoker in the sense of only one or two a day. Once I earned my first full paycheck, which was $46 and some odd cents. I can't remember the cents, but I always remember the $46. And that was for a fortnight. And I remember going across to the pub from the paymaster, and I purchased a packet of cigarettes and a box of matches and two big bottles of beer. And that was my first pay. That was the first items I bought out of my first pay. And it felt good to have my own money, and I didn't have to bum these things, and I didn't have to steal them and whatever. I didn't have to beg for somebody to buy me a packet of smokes or something like that, you know. So it was really cool. And that was really the start of my smoking career. I don't think I ever smoked less than at least a half a packet a day, or a packet of 20, from that time on. And I don't think it was very long before I was smoking a full packet a day and possibly more. And within a couple of years, I was trying all sorts of crazy things to cut back on my smoking, like pipes, cigars. I don't know whether anybody in this room at the moment remembers a little cigarettes. They were called Midways. They were made with tobacco leaf and not as a cigarette. They were just about the same size as a cigarette, though. They were quite mild and quite flavoursome from my recollection of them. So I tried, and even just all sorts of cigars, you know, Wee Willem Twos and all these things, you know, and proper cigars, the big ones like Winston Churchill held between his fingers, you know, and stuff like that. I even smoked Havana cigars, so, and pipes. And pipes was my main thing, and cigarettes. I tried rolling my own cigarettes to try to curtail it a bit, because I figured out in my brain, in my drunken brain at the time, that I could possibly cut back by buying tobacco and having to roll it, because I knew even way back then, and I still am, I'm lazy by nature. And I figured that, okay, if I have to roll it, I'd probably cut back. But it didn't take me long to figure out that while I'm sitting watching TV or something or other, I could roll a dozen cigarettes or something, put back in the packet, and have them already rolled. So that didn't do anything at all. And to jump ahead a bit, very quickly, I found myself smoking 60 to 70, sometimes 80 to 100 cigarettes a day in a 24-hour period. And so, or rather, I should say, going through that amount of cigarettes, I don't think I actually smoked that many. I think it'd be physically impossible, actually, to chain smoke even for 16 hours of waking. That's an awful lot of cigarettes. Possibly it could be done. I'm not saying it just can't be. But I used to go through that many. I used to put them on window ledges and forget about them and light up another one. And I'd have one on every corner of the pool table in the bar, and one on the window ledge and one in an ashtray at the bar as well. So I was never without a smoke wherever I went. I knew there was a lot of habits I had that entailed smoking, where smoking ruled my every movement of my life. I was totally obsessed with it in the mind, subconsciously, most of the time. I didn't realize it. Sometimes I did. And it was in this very room, actually, some years ago, probably 3-4 years ago. It wasn't long after it opened up on Pal Talk anyway, and I believe it's been going for about 6 years on here now or something, 4 years, 5 years or something, this Voices of Nicotine Recovery room. And it was in this very room where I heard someone say about they could never start their car unless they had a cigarette lit. And on reflection, that's exactly what I was like. You know, my car would not start unless I had a cigarette. I could not answer the phone unless I had a cigarette. And now if I had one going, fine, it was okay. If I didn't have one going, I'd quickly get one going. And so I tried to quit many times, and I found the more I tried to quit, the more I seemed to smoke, and the harder it became to not smoke. Yeah, I tried lots of things. I tried leaving my smokes at home when I went to work. I tried leaving them in my tucker box in the crib room when I was out in the paddock working. I tried leaving them in the glove box of the car. And all these things didn't work. I always managed to be able to bum a cigarette from somebody until such time as I got back to the crib room, which would be many I would bum. And it got to the stage where people were starting to refuse to give me cigarettes and say, go buy your own. I was getting a reputation of being an OP smoker, you know, other people's. They're a good brand, they're cheap, they don't cost you nothing, except your life in the end, maybe, you know. So they don't cost you any monetary value at all, OP brand, absolutely wonderful. And I was quickly getting that reputation, and it was all because I was trying to quit smoking. It wasn't because I wanted to be a bum, it wasn't because I couldn't afford to buy my own, it's just that I wanted to quit smoking, so I wouldn't carry them with me. And that only lasted probably a week at the most, maybe 3 days or something or other. It worked 3 to 4 days. I don't know, to be exact. But I got that reputation and I didn't like it, and so I started carrying them again. And when I couldn't get one, I'd duck out to the car to the glove box and I'd have a couple of drags, and then I'd put the cigarette packet in my pocket and take it in with me because I didn't want to be without. Now, if I left them at home, I'd make some excuse that I had to go home from work for some reason. I'd go home and get them, or I'd spend money that I didn't have to for that week, and I'd slip across to the shop and buy another couple of packets. I always bought at least 2 packets whenever I bought a packet, because I knew 1 packet was not going to be enough. I always had to have enough. So I sort of hoarded cigarettes. In the sense of I would have 2 and 3 and 4 cartons on tap at a time sometimes, and when it got down to the last carton I'd break into, I'd go and buy another 3 or 4 cartons instead of just buying 2 cartons to see me through for the week. I'd buy 3 or 4, which was enough for a fortnight. You know. I started buying the big packets of cigarettes. They were 40s, and they were $5 something a packet. When I stopped, when I became a non-smoker, and that was in 10th of February 1993. So I discovered that buying packets of 40 didn't do anything except give me a more ready supply and a bigger bulge in my shirt pocket, you know, and the seatbelt wouldn't go around it and all this sort of stuff, you know. So the craziness was there. I hacked and I coughed and I bought up all sorts of funny gunk out of my lungs, you know, green and black and blue and purple, and no, I don't think there was any purple in there, to be quite honest, but there was quite often green and black and gunky sort of stuff. And so it wasn't, you know, I made myself a promise with my smoking, as I did with my drinking some years before, some 10 years before I actually stopped smoking. I made a promise to myself before I stopped drinking that I was sitting at a bar on beside one of my brothers, and he had to take his belt off and tie it around his left wrist and pull it down with his right hand so he didn't shake that much to keep pressure on it so he wouldn't spill too much beer. And I remember looking at him in the City Spear Hotel that day and said, if I get that bad, I'll stop. Well, I did and I didn't. I got that bad and I didn't stop drinking until some time later, a few years later. But in a way, and I made myself the same promise with my smoking. I'd hear people coughing and spluttering and, oh, give me another one. This is good stuff. Oh, you know, and spitting everywhere and bringing up all that horrible gunk. And I've made myself a promise, I'm going backwards a little bit here again, some years before I actually stopped, that if I got as bad as that, I would stop. Well, once again, I got as bad as that, and I didn't. I didn't stop. It didn't. The promise didn't work. So I found myself at work one day, and you know, I don't have to fill in all the nitty gritties. The telephone, the car wouldn't work. I couldn't strike up a conversation with anybody unless I had a smoke in my hand. I couldn't do this. I couldn't do that. You fill in the blanks. I'm sure you've got some that I haven't had in my life, and I'm sure I've had quite a few maybe that you haven't had in your life too. You know, I couldn't take the children swimming because I had no breath. I could not swim halfway across an Olympic pool without stopping and treading water and just floating on my back to the other side, sculling my way across. I could not swim. I had no breath for anything. So anyway, I was on an 8-to-4 shift at work. I remember it very distinctly. I don't remember the date or the day, or I know it was the same year, 1993, so it was in January sometime. And I remember mentally throwing my hands in the air and utilizing the first step of this wonderful program. Now, the program I'm talking about here is Alcoholics Anonymous that I used. I didn't know there was such a thing as Nicotine Anonymous or Smokers Anonymous or any of that. I wasn't aware of it. But I remember mentally throwing my hands in the air and saying, okay, you've got me beat. I give in. Leave me alone. Go away. I don't want to fight you no more. So I stopped fighting smoking. That's my terminology. I didn't stop fighting nicotine. I stopped fighting smoking, which was the method I ingested nicotine. Nicotine is quite insidious, as I found out since becoming a non-smoker and the advent of acquiring the internet in 1996 into my life. I've done some research on it. And nicotine is a very fast-acting drug. It gets into the pleasure center, into the brain box, and very rapidly it depletes. So as it's depleting, it says, give me some more. I'm disappearing. And this happens very rapidly. So I light up another smoke and ingest some more. And I was ingesting all these chemicals into my body, into my lung and bloodstream, etc., etc., as well as the nicotine into my brain box to make me feel good. So I mentally threw my hands in the air. And a chain of events occurred that you can call it whatever you like. I'll just call it a chain of events that occurred. I knocked off work at 4 o'clock. I gave my hand over. I was probably in my mini mine in my car driving home somewhere around about 4:15, something like that. And I had the radio on, and there was an announcement came over the radio that a person was coming to this town, to Emerald, and he is a hypnotherapist for smoking, or rather for not smoking, for people who want to stop eating so much and a few other things. Now, the amazing thing about this is that I wrote the number down on my bare leg, because I wore shorts at work, of course, in our weather here in the tropics, and I wrote this down on my leg, and I got home, and I still don't remember to this day whether I rang it up immediately, wrote it down on a piece of paper and went and had a shower first or what, but all I know was I rang up that number and made an appointment, and I didn't even take notice of what the date was, but I did write it on the calendar, but I did not take any notice of the date. And the amazing thing is it turned out to be my birthday, actually, which is the 10th of February. So not only do I have 18 years as a non-smoker again this year, I also turned 60. So, two milestones. Great stuff. I also turned 28 years sober come sometime next month. I don't know when, the first week, second week, somewhere in the first or second week, I think, of March, somewhere around there. So I have 28 years of being sober and dry and sober, and I also have 18 years of being a non-smoker. But that's what I did. I applied the first step. I gave in to win. Now, I know there's some people who come to this room who haven't got any other problems, and this is the only 12-step program that they attend, or started to attend, and maybe they branched into Al-Anon and a few other places now, I don't know. But the marvelous thing about it is this first step, once we have that, once I acquired that full acceptance for smoking, as I had done for other things in my life apart from drinking before, and it worked marvelously. So I had no shadow of a doubt that it would work for me if I gave it a good try. I already had this belief in a power greater than myself, which is step two. But this chain of events occurred, and I went along to this bloke, and it was 1850 hours on the 10th of February 1993. I put my ball of my foot on and ground this last dump of mine, the last time I smoked, into the footpath, and I walked into this little room in the Emerald Memorial Club where he was conducting this business. And I haven't had a smoke since. You know, that was my last smoke, 1850 hours. I can't tell you when I had my last drunk because I was drunk and don't remember it. But I can tell you when I had my last smoke because I was dry and I was sober and I was sane and I had a little bit of rationality about me, thus I can remember it. And other things in my life as well. It's an amazing thing, the mind. If it's not befuddled with booze, it can remember lots of things. But that's sidetracking to another issue. So the important thing for me was and is, and the important thing I believe for anybody, if you belong to Nicotine Anonymous because you want to stop smoking and you have no other recourse, you've tried so many other things, but I'll bet you haven't tried everything. Even I haven't run around naked at midnight in the backyard kicking a soccer ball to stop smoking. And I'll bet there's a lot of other people who haven't either. So never say, I have tried everything. I don't believe in that. I did not try everything, but certainly tried some things. I tried the drops under the tongue, whatever they were supposed to do. Though I think they were supposed to work like antabuse does for drinking. Makes you horribly violently ill when you smoke. Well, I would put no drops under my tongue and lighten up within 5 minutes and smoking and still smoking the same, practically chain smoking. And by the way, I did try chain smoking once and I couldn't keep the blowtorch alight. I couldn't keep the damn chain alight. It kept going out. But, that's life, isn't it? It didn't do a thing. I tried the Nicorette gums prior to that. When they first come out where I am here, and I don't know when they first hit other countries or other states or other cities in this state even where I live. But I tried the Nicorette gums. They're the most powerfulest ones that I could get. I needed a prescription from the doctor to get them, and I was chewing them like normal PK, Wrigley's, whatever you like, chewing gum, and smoking at the same time. Never did a thing for me. Didn't have patches where I lived in a way. They might have done in the big smokes, but in the country towns where I was living, trying all these things out, there was no patches. I'd never heard of them in a way. So I don't know whether they would have worked for me and eased me out off this or not either. Now, I'm saying all these things because it's not that I'm condoning, nor am I not condoning using NRTs, nicotine replacement therapy sort of things. That's a debate for the science, scientific people, I believe. I like the idea of cold turkey through these steps, and that's what I did, even though I have stated I got hypnotized. But I haven't wanted to nor needed to pick up a smoke since. I haven't had that need to, so I don't. It worked for me. I believe it worked for me because I was ready. I had had enough. And I believe that's the way these spiritual programs, anonymous programs, for whatever they're put into place for, however you use them in your life, if one gets over the primary objective first, which for a person who hasn't got a drink problem or an overeating problem or whatever, what a smoking problem, they come into Nicotine Anonymous seeking help because they've tried lots of other things, probably most of those NRTs that I just mentioned and probably some more, and different various ways of not smoking by standing on your head to go to sleep instead of lying flat on your back or something. You know, it doesn't matter what we tried. Some of us have tried some zany things. You know, I smoked in the shower. Why did I smoke in the shower? Because I could. Simple as that. And I had a need to keep that ingestion of nicotine and to the well-being that it made me feel. I had a need to do that. So why should I let a 10-minute shower or 5-minute shower block me from enjoying my pleasure? You know, I didn't. Nothing I ever did was without a smoke. Middle of winter, trying to roll a smoke out in the paddock with cold fingertips is nigh on impossible. It's even worse if it's cold, if it's in the middle of winter and it's raining. You know? Like, I can't talk about snowing because we don't get snow where I am, but raining in the middle of winter makes it all miserable. And trying to roll a cigarette is just about impossible. So you got under some shelter, be it a tree or a wagon out in the paddock. I was a shunter, and there always you'd squat under a wagon, or you go to the Humpy and you'd dry your hands and you'd roll, you know, half a dozen or so to go out to last you for the next 15, 20 minutes to an hour while you're out in the paddock running around like a madman. And so I did all sorts of zany things to smoke. I tried some not so zany things to not smoke. But anyway, I got hypnotized and it worked for me. The amazing thing about this is later on I found out this guy came back to town a few years later, probably about 3, maybe 4 years later. And I got talking to him. I went to him again. The visit was for free this time. And I found out from him by talking to him afterwards that, well, actually, I went along with my wife because she saw that I'd stopped drinking for stopped smoking for that 3 to 4 years. She wanted to give it a try too, so she did. But she lasted approximately 3 months and went back on smoking. She said, "Bugger this, mate." She couldn't use that slogan because we didn't know it was there. Anyway, you know, the weight can wait. Anyway, so women are like that more so than men, I think. More worried about their weight than what a man is. But anyway, I went along for sport. Well, I found out afterwards that that guy had no intentions that year that I went to him in 1993 of coming to Emerald or even expanding his business from Mackay, which is about a 4-4.5 hour drive north of me, where I am now. And he was there solely because his daughter had given birth to a boy, and he was just there with his wife to support his daughter and to see their new grandchild. And he thought to himself, well, if I'm going to be there for 2 weeks or 3 weeks, I might as well drum up a bit of business as well. He's a freelance fella. Oldish type fellow, he's well into his 60s. And that's the reason, the only reason why he was coming to Emerald. And the only reason why he said, well, he might as well fill in a bit of time and drum up a bit of business and make a quid while he's there. So fair enough by me, you know, that's free enterprise. Good luck to him. And it worked for me. So I believe that chain of events was because I was ready. Because I had clearly stated to this power greater than myself that, hey, I haven't trusted you with this. Now I am. I accept that I'm totally powerless over smoking. I accept that my life is unmanageable in lots of areas because of this. And that's what I did, that first step. So once again, I say to those people who are having a look here, I don't think there's anybody new that I can. Oh, there's a couple of nicks that I don't know. And, give it a fair dinkum go and not only admit that you're powerless, accept. The acceptance is the key in my life to everything. I apply these same principles to so many things in my life today. To name a few, it was to stop yelling at my son, the way I had a habit of when I was tired and that. At one particular occasion, it frightened me to see that poor child cowering in the corner of the lounge room from me. You know, cowering in the corner, absolutely frightened from the way I yelled at him and pointed my finger at him. And he was about 5 or 6, you know, it reminded me of me. That's the way our father treated us. And I made a vow there and then that I was powerless over what my son was going to do to me or with me. You know, not knowing any different, that I should not react like that in the future. And I applied that principle wholeheartedly, and I never once did it again. that fella's 24 years of age, and no matter where we're at, he throws his arms around me. And he says, I love you, Dad. But anyway, so with my smoking, that's what I did. I was fully ready. And I'm a great believer in when the pupil is ready, the teacher will appear. My teacher just happened to be a fella with an evil eye. His words, quote unquote, not mine. Look me in my evil eye. Only one, not the both of them. It won't work. And that's the quote unquote what he said. Look into my evil eye. And so it worked for me. Now, a lot of people say when I say I'm all for cold turkey, I believe I went cold turkey. I needed a catalyst to force me to do it. Some people just stop smoking and chew lots of gum and, sugarless gum preferably, chew on cinnamon sticks and suck on lead pencils and burrows and straws and, toothpicks and matchsticks and you name it, to take the habit, to keep that habit going of the hand-to-mouth coordination sort of caper. That is cold turkey. I believe what I did was cold turkey. I believed I was ready. That chain of events happened. I believe it was meant to happen that way. I was in the right spot at the right time. Now, if I had heard that advert probably the day before, I probably would not have taken any notice of it. I can only conjecture that because I have been in situations where there has been, in this very town when I was trying the Nicorettes, the gum, as a replacement, in the mid-1980s, in 86, I think it was, or 87, and I'd heard about this hypnotism, this hypnotherapy thing then, but I didn't take any notice of it. And I wanted to quit then. I wanted to stop. I wouldn't have bought these $80 or something, rather a packet it used to cost me for those Nicorettes. I only bought the one packet. I think I'd have used about half a dozen because I was smoking with them. They didn't do a thing for me, maybe. Yeah, I just wasn't ready. The drops under the tongue. I never got sick from smoking. And as I said, the patches I never tried. I've never tried chewing tobacco. Well, I did white ox, just as a bit of a dare to myself once I put a little bit in my mouth and chewed it, but that's not proper chewing tobacco. I never chewed tobacco. I never dipped whatever that is. I've only heard that terminology since I've been coming to this room, dipping. I have no idea how that works, to be quite honest. I think it's a little sack or something or other, and you put it between your gum and your jaw or something, cheekbone, cheek or something, and suck on it or something like that. I don't know, not sure. But if there's any dippers in there, you'll know. I don't. So here I be, 18 years later. I, as a non-smoker, and that's what I refer to myself as today. I really don't believe that I'm addicted to anything today. I have a lot of loves in my life today. So I don't refer to myself as an addict of any kind. But I do most certainly, what's the word I'm thinking of here? I do most certainly endorse Nicotine Anonymous if you have a problem with smoking or using tobacco in any form. Smokeless or otherwise. Smokeless tobacco of all kinds actually were banned in the 1950s in Australia by Commonwealth legislation. So we've never had that problem to as big a degree as other countries, mainly the European, on the shoreline there, Finland and Norway and those places apparently have chewing tobacco or smokeless tobacco in various forms, and so does the United States. It's been outlawed here. But that's got nothing to do with how or why I became a non-smoker. I have seen people chewing tobacco when I was a child, actually. I was born in 1951. I have seen it. Never got involved with it. But I fully endorse Nicotine Anonymous, and I fully endorse this very room. It's called Voices of Nicotine Recovery. How the voices come into it is probably that little voice coming into your head saying, you have to stop this one day, either when you're dead, or it's affecting you that much you've got to carry an oxygen bottle around with you wherever you go and into you. It's going to interfere with your life eventually. Why not stop now? That little voice in my head, I don't ever recollect it saying that, but I do remember recollect saying, and as I said, I give up. I'm not fighting you no more. Leave me alone, go away. Or whatever words you like to put there. And that's how it worked for me. That's what I did. That's a little bit of what I was like and a little bit of what I did. And, you know, it's such a wonderful feeling. This is what I'm like now. About 2 years approximately, so somewhere around about 1995, I started to realize I was smelling rain as it came in over the plane, virtually, not theoretically. It was coming over the plane out in Emerald from the west, the northwest, and I could smell it. And I hadn't smelled that for years, and it was such a beautiful smell. I'd walk past somebody mowing their grass, and I could smell that chewed up grass, and I hadn't smelled that for so many years. I became aware, I don't know when I actually started smelling all these things, but I became aware of all these things approximately about 2 years later. Some people say in a few months they're doing that, some people say they never get it back. Okay, it doesn't really matter, I suppose, but this is what happened to me. You know, smelling dog poo to some people would be a sheer disgusting thing. Well, it does smell horrible, doesn't it? Especially when it's stuck to the heel of your shoe or some such place. You know, many times I've trod in dog poo and I've hopped into my car and I couldn't understand where the smell was coming from. It was in the carpet of the car. Okay, it dries out and the smell goes away after a while. But the situation is, I never knew I was carrying around with you. I never knew it was in the car, you know, until I noticed it, physically saw it. And nowadays I can smell it if I do that before I get in the car and scrape it off and wipe it off the best I can, you know, find a stick, some leaves or a puddle of water or something and take the shoe off and wash it and whatever. Yeah, I love smelling dog poo when it's on the heel of my shoe today. I really do. I love the smell of it because I know it's there. And as crazy as that sounds, yeah. I found that I could take my children swimming. I discovered that I didn't have to sit on the bank no more. My daughter said, come on, Dad, come on in. I say, no, I'm out, darling, you know, telling lies to children, you know, as we do. I'll melt if I go in there. No, you won't melt, Dad, you know. By this time, she's 93. She would have been 5, so 95. She would have been 7, yeah, 6 or 7. 7 she would have been, yeah. And you won't melt, Dad, come on in. And I discovered something that particular day. Instead of just going to the wading pool with them, I was in the big pool with them swimming. And I found I could pull myself along the bottom of that pool right across the other side. Now, it's an Olympic-sized pool. I'm not talking about the length of it. I'm talking about the width of it. And I could pull myself across on the bottom and then crawl up the other side. And that amazed me. Now, I could actually hold my breath for that long. Because no one in the white world could I do that before. So I became aware of all these marvellous things happening in my life today, you know. Now here where I live, I smell the rain coming over the mountains. You know, I still smell fresh cut grass and stuff like that. And I can hop in somebody's car and I know immediately they're a smoker, you know, because I can smell it. All these marvellous things, the upside of being a non-smoker is so marvellous. My daughter can't even recollect... I asked her the last time I was talking to her in this very flat where I live on her 21st, which was last year. And I asked her if she remembered me smoking, and she said, "No, Dad, I didn't know you ever smoked." "Mum did." And I said, "Yeah, your mother did." And she said, "No, I can't ever remember you smoking." And Lance does, kind of, he says, because he's 2 years older, my son. He says, "Yeah, Dad, I do remember your mum sitting on the front porch smoking, and what have you, with cups of tea and talking." I said, "Yeah, okay." But Joy has never seen me smoke. She's got a double bonus there. She's never seen me drink, and she's never seen me smoke. Lance hasn't seen me drink, but he has seen me smoking. So I can sort of hope through that I'm setting some sort of an example for my children by not being a smoker, not being a drunk, and stuff like that. You know, I can only pray that they follow that. Although Joy has never smoked, she likes a couple of those, some sort of things they're called. I don't know what they're called now. Carolyn used to like them too, and they weren't even out when I stopped drinking. And I asked somebody about them, and he said this bloke had an AA meeting, actually told me one night, he said, "It's just like drinking some lemonade or something." He said, "You would never have liked it." They're not very much alcohol in them. They don't get you tipsy or drunk unless you drink cartons of them. So, you know, Joy has a couple of them. Lance likes his rum a little bit. That's okay. They don't get into trouble with it. And Joy doesn't smoke. And Lance, well, he started smoking. Then he said to me one day, he says, "Dad, I'm trying to stop smoking." I said, "Well, stop trying and just do it, mate." And he says, "I find it difficult." I said, "Well, I told you that when you first started smoking." He said, yeah, I know. And I said, "Yeah." I thought to myself, you know, like father, like son, "Yeah, I know better than anybody else." And, of course, I also think of my mother's favourite saying was that you can't put an old head on young shoulders. So they've got to walk their own walk. And But I just hope that I'm a bit of an example to them in the way I live, as far as that kind of stuff sort of goes, you know, be it smoking, drinking, drugs or anything else. It's just the way it is. And so that's a bit about what I'm like today. I don't wake up coughing and hacking. And I could give you a demo. Some people in here are quite amazed that I can actually do it. But, yeah, I haven't forgotten what it's like, and I don't want to forget, because it reminds me of what I could be again if I wanted to pick up a smoke and light it up, and I don't wish to go back to that. So I have a choice today. Once I was powerless over smoking, today I have power over it. I have the choice to say whether I do or not. And I believe in that wholeheartedly, and the only way I'm able to have that is through the continuous practice through steps 10 and 11 of steps 2 through to 9, which enables me to fit back into society as a non-smoker, in this case, as a person that is not polluting everybody else's lungs, as a person that is not, you know, I can hop in my car and I've got a little thing in the air vent there that smells of apple. At the moment, you know, I change them around. I have vanilla, I have apple, I have citrus. You know, they're little things that you just put in your air vent and turn your thing on, and they take the smell away from your car. I think they're much more efficient than those little Christmas tree things. And my car has never had a cigarette in it. My last two cars have never had cigarettes in them. Well, not since I've owned them. I've owned this one since new, and the other one was a 1990 model, and I bought it in '96. And so, you know, and I'll finish on this note. It was quite hilarious, actually, because when we used to go for a drive somewhere together, my wife and I, we'd always take her car because she could smoke in her car and I wouldn't let her in mine. So we weren't allowed to take my car. If we're going on a long journey, we had to take her car. And that's just the way it is, you know. So I'm going to finish on that note. When I stopped smoking, I didn't stop for my wife, my children, my next door neighbour, the boss, or my workmates, or anybody else but me. And that, I believe, is also a key to my being a non-smoker today. I do not worry about other people smoking around me or whatever. If I want to move away, I'll move away. It's as simple as that. I have the choice today. So what other people do with their lungs and their minds and what have you is entirely up to them. It's none of my business. It can become my business if somebody doesn't wish to smoke and they approach me on it. I will certainly advise or give them whatever assistance I can as to what I had to go through to get to where I'm at today with it. I thank you all for listening. I'll let go of the mic.